welcome to the Fort Brock's Crypto Podcast.
Fort Brock's.
I am your host, Neil Lalonza, with my co-host, co-founder of Fort Brock's, Mr. Brandon Heath.
Brandon Don Heath, thank you.
Or Don, that we affectionately call him.
Yeah.
Dude, look at you. Your future's so bright.
What's up, man?
Yeah.
Hey, dude.
This is the best episode ever.
Yeah.
You know why?
Why?
Let me tell you why. It's the best episode because we're going to talk about Web3.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
It's That's a little controversial.
I mean, it's not that's not an exaggerated statement.
No, it's not.
It's a little bit of a shit show right now.
Yeah.
Not in the sense of the reality of it.
Yeah.
But the perception of it.
Yeah. What is it?
What is Web3? Yeah. You know what I mean? And it's funny. All things in tech seem to move by name and number.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of things move by name and number, right?
Yeah. I mean, we're on Super Bowl 50, whatever.
Yeah. You know? Well, it was going in chronological order of that, right? But, I mean, the iPhone, everything became iPad.
Yeah.
iPhone.
But they cheated. They started it at 3. So
we can at least give it to them. But, but in this particular case, we have Web 1.0, Web 2.0.
Yeah.
And Web 2.0, I mean, it was just funny. I remember when that phrase started.
Yeah.
It was just funny.
Yeah.
Because you have people, like, let's say Mark Andreessen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they have roots.
Yeah.
In that period in time.
Yeah.
Like, such technical roots in it. And it's impressive. But it's also hard to understand.
In Web 2? One.
No, just describing the history of all things the web.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if you were technically savvy and you understood how things were built, you have a different point of view than if you didn't.
Like, are we going back to AOL times?
Well, it's even before that, right? It's even before, like, what, you know, 1.0 is way before AOL. I mean, there was a internet before then.
Yeah,
I mean,
for sure.
I mean, the way we like to talk about things is more layman's.
Yeah.
Definitely sensationalized, let's say, or glorified by media. Because when you think of internet, war games. War games hit internet.
Yeah. Remember
that? With Matthew Broderick.
That's true.
So, anyways, where we're going with this and why this is the best episode ever is because we get to talk about Web3.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to this episode because, again, we get to go blue sky.
Blue sky, baby.
To describe things, because so much of Web3 isn't even built yet.
No, for sure.
For all the promise it has, it's just not built yet.
No.
So in order to articulate thoughts about it, we get to go blue sky. And you know, I love going blue sky.
Yeah, you do.
Because
you're a dreamer.
A little bit. Yeah. And we talked about it. You know, you got to have one hand in the clouds, one foot in the ground.
Yeah.
But you have to get creative enough to see what the future could be. But realistic enough to know, okay, this is how it needs to get built.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a crazy combination of how any human comes up with
But things. Would you say that you're more blue sky than Jack Dorsey?
I don't have as big a swinging dick as he does.
That's true.
You know what I mean? Maybe it's because I don't have, you know, one of the most prolific social networks that still struggles to make a real P&L.
Does it?
Yeah, profit and loss statement. It's never done as good as others, but it has such a cachet within our society and culture.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing the power that it has, but at the same rate, it just can't seem to find its way to a strong P&L. Mm. It isn't to say it never can. It's just interesting. But, you know, he's done some great things. Like Square.
Yeah, springboarded himself into Square.
His partner in Square, though, I forget the book, The Innovation Stack, I think it is. Great book.
Yeah.
His partner, obviously he chose a really good partner in Square.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he has the platform.
Yeah.
He has the capital.
Should we do disclosures?
Yeah, we should dive into those.
Okay.
Right?
Before
we really get going. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, disclosures. We are not financial advisors, wealth managers, lawyers, brokers, or CPAs. We're merely sharing the information from our point of view, and none of this should be construed as investment advice whatsoever.
Yeah.
In full transparency, we also own a crypto mining company that we allow anybody to mine crypto easier with us. So there you go. That's also part transparency and shameless plug. Boom.
Yeah.
Now we get to move forward.
Yeah.
Clear-minded, because we don't have to worry about the SEC the SEC saying you're giving out investment advice.
Yeah.
Because we're not trying to become a problem here. We're not a broker.
No, not yet. Wait, what?
True. Just kidding. Not yet. I do like that mentality because it leaves us open-ended to, you know what? Maybe yeah. we'll grow into that, right?
Yeah, why not?
Why not?
I like suits.
So we have an outline for the show.
Yeah.
So let's go through that outline and start from the top. What is Web3?
Yeah.
The way we've seen people describe it, this isn't ours. We pulled it up. We've seen it from different presentations, whether it was at Consensus or even A16Z, which is Andreessen Horowitz, the VC firm. There's a lot of people that seem to be subscribed to at least this way of describing it. So Web 1.0 was read-only, 1990 to 2004.
Yeah.
You could argue that it was even before that. Anyways, Web
2.0. You could start building profiles.
Well.
Yeah.
We'll just go with read-only, right?
Okay.
Web 2.0 is read and write.
Mm-hmm.
And then Web 3 is read, write, and own.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
That's a good way of basing it down to its
core elements.
Yeah.
Right. But I'm of the opinion the biggest thing about Web 3, when people say, well, what is Web 3? How does it offer all these benefits? It removes intermediaries.
Yeah.
Each time that we've had any type of technology advancement, I feel like it's been more empowering to the individual or the end user, I should say. It doesn't necessarily have to be an individual, but to the end user. And it's removed friction.
Yeah.
In this particular case, removing intermediaries is one of the biggest things that Web3 does.
Yeah.
But what does that mean exactly? You know what I mean? What is an intermediary in this particular case with Web3? I'm suggesting that...
You're talking about hosting platforms?
Could be that.
I
mean, if you think about Web3 hosting, you can automatically point towards Flux. Like Flux is trying to be a decentralized hosting platform.
Yeah.
For both web and video games and social networks.
Yeah.
But you also have things like Filecoin that's trying to decentralize storage of data. And so is Arweave or Airweave. One of these days.
Still haven't figured out which one.
I know. I don't know why. I feel like I'm doing a completely primitive male stereotype, but not just asking directions on this one.
Yeah.
But I think we will at some point. You know what?
Should tweet them out right now?
No.
Is it Arweave
I'm sure we could Google it and just be like, how do you pronounce this?
Yeah. Question, guys.
But we're big fans, or at least I'm a big fan of that. I don't want to speak for you just yet, but we're learning about it because we want to get into mining it and possibly offering up some of that decentralized storage resources.
And the mining of it. Shared mining.
Yeah, but Web3 is separate from crypto.
Yeah.
But it does encompass crypto.
Yeah.
Because of the idea of being able to own it.
Yeah.
Because you can use crypto technology, such as NFT, non-fungible tokens, that you can now assign ownership to these properties. And you have things like the Ethereum name service, right?
Yeah.
Or Unstoppable Domains that has names that you're able to buy the domain and you don't have to keep paying a host.
Yeah.
Because you own it now.
Yeah.
And you don't have to pay that property tax, so to speak.
Yeah.
Which I'm a big fan of because think of the ENS service, right?
Yep.
You buy it, you own it.
Mm-hmm.
But if I go buy fortbrox.com, which we did through GoDaddy, we
have
own
to
it.
Pay each year.
But we still have to renew it.
Yeah.
Because if we don't renew it, they'll take it from us, and they can. So do we ever really own it?
No.
No. And that's bullshit.
Yeah.
Flat out.
Yeah.
But GoDaddy's a hell of a business product, or just a product in general. I think they have a great business model.
They sponsor NASCAR teams.
And you like that?
Well.
Is that one of the draws to GoDaddy for you?
No, I'm just saying. They're hell of a beast.
Well, that means they can only turn left.
That's true.
No. But my point being is that you never truly own it.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like buying a house. And this could be argued by many real estate people, but I'm involved in real estate investing. And when you buy a home, you never own it.
No.
No. You could pay it off. But let me tell you something right now. You don't pay that property tax, they'll take that home.
They'll take it.
So do you never really own your home?
That's an interesting way to look at it.
Yeah, but in Web3, they're saying that you can finally own certain things.
Yeah.
And that's one of the components of it. So you could read, write, and own.
Yeah. And the way they do that, the way crypto powers that is because of blockchain technologies. You take that hash that's assigned to that website, and then you immutably connect it with a token. Yeah. So in this case, Ethereum, you know.
So you can tokenize the asset of, let's say, a domain name.
Yep.
You could tokenize the asset of certain digital property you create, or maybe design you create. Yep. You know, there's a lot of ways.
You own it till you lose that private key. You know what I mean?
So, I know, right?
Yeah.
So, in this episode, we're going to be talking about a lot of things that it does help, in my opinion.
Should we buy GoDaddy.eth? I'm just wondering.
That'd be so fun. So, to that point,
And then rent it to them?
Do you remember squatters?
Yeah.
People who would buy domains knowing that eventually other companies would come looking for them.
Yeah. That's why Wizard Cats is wizcats.com.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So DeVille, I forget the exact domain, but I think it was bakerskateboards.com. Mm-hmm. And Baker came knocking on his door one day. I think it was Baker. I'm pretty sure it was Baker. I heard the same thing happen with Volcom.
Yeah.
And that somebody else owned the .com and they came knocking at their door, sell it to us.
Yeah.
Or we're going to litigate, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there's a lot more, there's a lot of stories like that where people who were early to it purchased those and then, you know, they could hold it for ransom.
Yeah.
Certain people were selling domain names for millions of dollars back in the early .com boom.
For sure.
but going back to kind of this precursor to everything that we're talking about, it does help if you have knowledge or some sort of interest in what, you know, the web is and its evolution, but by no means do you need to know everything. And nor are, I can't speak for you, but myself, I'm not as knowledgeable as far as the history, like somebody like Mark Andreessen. And one thing he's really good at, and he's, you know, educated himself with, is a lot of history. He utilizes that history when storytelling to articulate a thought, to validate a concept, or just to help some sort of way to articulate how people can relate to it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I'm a big fan of it.
Yeah. We try to do that on this podcast.
We try to do it in layman's terms.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If there is a way that we can compare it to anything that seems more relatable, that definitely is helpful. You know, we try to do it in a chill manner.
Yeah.
But so as we move forward with, what is Web3? You know, we're talking about it in so many ways. I'm of the opinion, again, it removes intermediaries.
Yep.
There's so many intermediaries in the web space currently. So if you want to tweet something, you go to Twitter.
Yep.
You know, you want to post something, you can go to Instagram, you can go to Facebook. I mean, they have our content.
Yeah.
We do not make a dollar off of our content that we're giving them. One of the biggest things that pissed me off as a business owner, and it felt like a bait and switch, was when Facebook, your organic reach of your posts as a business early on was far and wide.
Yeah.
Anybody who followed us or liked our page, I should say, you know, they'd see our content.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden it seemed like one day the light switch went off and they didn't see our content anymore.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, if you're a business, we're just not going to show you as much organically, even though people like the page and all that. Because so many businesses and some of the clients that we had when we had an agency for 11 years, they spent millions of dollars on, you know, campaigns. And there's one particular brand.
Facebook wanted that money.
Well, of course. I mean, I understand that Mark need to make money.
Mark was like, hey, that's my money.
Well, so did Sheryl Sandberg. I mean, she should be just as much credited for the growth of that company and success of that company as anybody, which she just recently... I think she's no longer there now.
Oh no.
But it was awesome. I mean, she definitely, I'd love to know more about her story.
Yeah.
Because she definitely pioneered such a role, especially as a female.
Yeah.
But she clearly was good at what she did.
Yeah.
I don't know how much scorched earth there is or if there's not.
Yeah.
But at the same rate, she clearly was good at what she did.
Yeah.
But anyways, so in this particular case of the example I'm giving with Facebook, you know, they had all these brands dumping all this money into all these campaigns. They do call to action on social media, you know, with any one of these marketing campaigns, branding campaigns. And they, you know, would get a million likes. And they're like, oh, my God, I remember it was a big deal when you were a company and you got a million likes.
Yeah.
And so they did all that. And then all of a sudden they do the light switch with your content. And you're like, what the fuck? Really? Come on. And I mean, I can even give another example where I was a co-founder in a lead generation service for lawyers. I know. All right. Try not to judge too hard.
Yeah.
It was that in between in the career where I was looking more at
making
money
one.
Than doing work that really inspired me.
Yeah.
But the what we really wanted to do was help people find a lawyer that would make sense.
Yep.
Regardless. We had such a great lead gen machine in Facebook. We were paying 10 cents for, I think it was every time that they would fill out the form on the website at the time. Like, we were crushing it. I mean, mind you, we were doing it. Our best times were, let's say, you know, normal work day is from 9 to 5 or 8 to 6, actually, in the reality of things. People can say 9 to 5 all they want, but it's kind of 8 to 6 in a lot of ways, especially for blue collar. But after 6, most of our competitors in that space would shut down. You know, they go home, they have families and everything. But that's when we would kick our ads into overdrive, and we'd see a lot more leads is from that 6 to later on, because that's when people were off work or done doing their responsibilities to go and try to find a fucking lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And with Facebook, we were crushing it.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, that too, like a light switch, they pulled it away. And there was always this click conversion rate that never made sense. The customer service side never makes sense. And here's the thing. I'm not trying to bash Facebook.
Yeah.
Because I'm not trying to. It's just sharing an experience that, you know, I had with it on multiple occasions. And at the end of the day, they still, you know, they're a big company. They paved the way for a lot of innovation. For all their faults, they have done a lot of good in terms of how the web has evolved. They're part of that history now.
Yeah.
So when Mark Andreessen will probably be having a book come out in 10, 20 years, a lot of the things that he's probably going to be referencing, you know, there was a lot of things that Facebook, whether directly involved in his story, it's still part of that history.
Yeah.
Such a deep, deep part of that history. So it's there's been a lot of pros, but there's obviously been some cons. And in this particular way of how it relates to Web3 is that, and you have to imagine this because it's not built yet.
Mm-hmm.
If there was a decentralized social network such as Facebook, or a decentralized way that every bit of content you share is equally distributed amongst the different networks that they're being shared on, people subscribe to you as opposed to those networks.
Yeah.
And even the Instagram CEO, Adam Mosseri, I think his last name is, he had talked about this on a recent TED
talk.
TED talk, yeah. Where he was of the opinion that this concept would work, where if you as an individual, let's say, had your own token and everybody subscribed to that, and you had, you know, NFTs going out to everybody, all your subscribers, but that particular token or that particular network would then work on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
Yeah.
So they were subscribed to you and whatever channel they, you know, engage with your content on whatever channel. But if Instagram took a shit and they were out of business, it doesn't mean that Instagram now is closed, and when you go to log in, you have no access to your followers.
Yeah.
Because they're still tokenized
or
to
your
you.
Pictures.
Or any of the content that you've uploaded. You still have it all accessible to you. And there's something powerful in that. And that in itself is one example of how Web3 could work.
Yeah.
It's not there yet. I can't stress so enough. None of it. It's not there yet.
It's not.
But it could be.
Yeah. It one day will.
Well, I mean,
maybe.
So that's just one example. And we're going to give several examples as we kind of go through this. But
yeah,
one of the other pieces that I hear, or I think is a misconception, is that people think Web3 is inherently decentralized.
Yeah.
It can be, but it's not.
Yeah, not yet.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea of ownership it's being decentralized potentially with the methods that they're using through crypto, but it's not decentralized in its entirety yet.
Yeah.
And I think there's something to be said for that, because
I mean, there's some pros and cons to that as well. Like, I mean, Twitter is a great example of that. Like, should you be able to block people from tweeting?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's, you know, certain few cases have come up where people have, like, high, big, prominent people have been kicked off of Twitter for...
You can say Trump. I mean, this is...
Well, like, him, like MTG, and then, you know, some people on the left as well.
Yeah,
it's, but I'm not. I'm just trying not to get political.
You're trying
not.
But I get, I totally
what
get
I'm
it.
Trying to get at is, you know, with a fully decentralized, there's no way that you could kick somebody off a platform.
No.
Yeah.
Just like a fully decentralized crypto and a way of purchasing and exchanging it, if it is truly decentralized, regardless of where you're at on Russia and Ukraine, people in Russia could still access their crypto.
Yeah.
But if it's centralized, then you could stop it from happening.
Yeah.
So again, there's pros and cons with it. I mean, it's the same argument or debate or insight, however you want to classify it. As
somebody always comes in and just, you know, fucks up the party, basically.
Well, they say crypto's used for illicit activity.
That's, yeah.
Money's used for illicit activity.
Yeah. Do you know how much cocaine is on every dollar bill?
Well, here's the thing.
You know what I mean?
You know how many cash-only businesses there are for simple mom-and-pop restaurants?
Yeah.
Or even parking garages?
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're not doing anything, you know, super volatile.
Yeah.
Or, you know, they're not hurting anybody per se.
Yeah.
But you know they're skimming.
Yeah, probably.
Because they can.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot of research
skimming
you can do on your own.
Or just not reporting.
Yeah, they don't have to report either. You know, there's so much that you can do in that particular space when you're in a cash-only business.
Yeah.
So, but having said that, you can do your own research, those who are listening, watching, and you'll see the stats behind crypto are not as much as you would think with other scams.
Did it start that way? Possibly. There's a big push during the Silk Road era that basically pushed Bitcoin into, you know, prominency because of that.
But it's also because of the Silk Road case, like Katie Hahn, who was part of the Department of Justice. It's how they found the criminals.
Yeah.
Was because of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And the immutable ledger.
Yeah.
So you win, you know, in that way. I think it was on one of the Crypto Vibes podcasts, either I did a week or two ago, but it was in the news. They were talking about however many scams were done with crypto in 2021, maybe 3 billion or something like that. Maybe less. I don't know. You have to look back at that. But phone scams were 30 billion.
Yeah.
Phone.
Yeah, it makes sense.
It's been around a lot longer. I mean, those scams have been happening for years.
I get a text every day from somebody that I'm like, block. Report a spam.
But the reason why we're pointing out some of these negative components is like you have to have some perspective on the technology or some of the things that are currently happening, because I feel like a lot of this is headline grabbing, clickbait style way of doing it. It isn't to say we shouldn't be cognizant of the cons with a lot of this technology, because it would be nice in an optimistic way that a lot of the technology that's being innovated, so let's say Web3 is the thing, that it will be better than its predecessor as far as removing risk or, you know, any type of negativity, really.
Yeah.
In the form of scams, any type of, you know, negative
hopefully.
Outcome. That's what you would hope.
Because it's tied to somebody's, like, tied to somebody's blockchain, their ownership. So, I mean, it does also put another gateway in your, like another gate in your way, right?
What do you mean?
It's another stepping stone. Or what do you call that when, you know, there's like a fence or something where some people, you have to like pay to buy into this like pool, this project.
Oh, I see. I mean, it could be a paywall. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, kind of.
I mean,
like there's a gate, and like unless you own a piece of it, you can't get through.
Oh, so I mean that could be illustrated to what, you know,
you
has
know
been
I mean?
The added value proposition of private Discords for NFT holders. So like you have Bored Ape Yacht Club, and you have to be an owner of Bored Ape, I believe, to be an other side landowner.
Yep.
Or something to that extent.
Yeah.
So within those metaverse environments. So but that's centralized.
Yeah.
That's not decentralized. But it does tie into the idea of Web3 as far as read-write ownership in terms of that. So it doesn't have to be decentralized in order for it to be Web3. It inherently would be nice if it was.
Yeah.
But
just like all things crypto aren't.
Decentralized,
yeah.
I mean, we've seen it written in a number of places where it talks about Web3 being decentralized, and maybe that's the goal.
Yeah.
But that isn't the reality.
Yeah.
And so in step with that, some of the Web3 examples is you have ownership.
Yep.
But you also have identity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talk about it a little bit, and I think we mentioned in one of the previous podcasts talking about the soulbound token in regards to Vitalik Buterin. It's only tied to that particular human. Let's say it was your social security card or your birth certificate. It's tied to you forever.
Yeah.
When I went into the DMV to get my real ID, they would not accept my current DMV license as valid proof of identity.
Yep.
I had to bring in my birth certificate and a utility bill. Neither one of them had my photo on it, whereas the DMV photo on my existing license was there. What the fuck?
Yeah.
Really?
You can't.
So in step with that, Web3, if it solves the problem identity, that's a big thing too. Because when you tie the idea of crypto's immutable ledger with IDs, and then you talk about ownership of properties.
Yeah.
And it could even mean physical properties. Because again, you're tying, let's say, an NFT to a house, and you transact that data through a Web3 portal.
Well, how's the government going to take your house and your NFT of that land away?
They will.
No, I'm just kidding.
Because all it is proof, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, and this is something I listen to a lot of podcasts, like a lot.
Yeah.
And there's so many, you know, from Vox Media has so many different components.
I mean,
you have Recode, I think it's Decode, Bankless. They're not on Vox, but, you know, there's so many, you have the Lex Friedman. I don't know how to say his last name correctly, but for those particular points, there's so many great podcasts out there. And I think it was Tom Cowan, I believe it was interviewing Mark Andreessen, and he's asking him about Web3 and how does it benefit creators. And Mark Andreessen is usually really good at answering questions. In this particular case, I feel like he could have been clearer, but to boil it down, it's just not built yet.
Yeah.
But the promise is there. And so how could a creator benefit from Web3 that they can't benefit from Web 2.0 is that they get to remove intermediaries.
Yeah.
The thing is, it's just not built yet. The biggest portion for creators is discoverability. So however you find a creator's content, they're the gatekeepers of allowing people to even make money.
Yeah.
You know, people have talked about Substack as being one of those in the place that helps creators make money on their own terms.
Yeah.
But you still got to go to Substack.
Yeah.
You still got to create a Substack.
Yeah.
It's not, Substack's not decentralized.
No.
In that way. And so, but they could create tools that would allow it to either be decentralized or for the creator to take more ownership. I mean, they clearly make money on the creators
using their
platform. Yeah. But it's, you know, because for a custom domain, for instance, I think it's a one-time fee to set it up. And they have to have a revenue model, otherwise the business will fail. It has to have a revenue model.
Yeah.
And we all don't want to be tied to the advertising way of doing things, because then we're doing the same things over and over. But in this situation where people talk about NFTs and, let's say, escrow papers, and I know we're jumping around a little bit with some of these examples, but it all ties back to the same thing, is that it's supposed to streamline the process.
Mm-hmm.
For those who've purchased a car, it takes quite a bit of time to go from salesperson to credit check to choosing which line of financing you want to filling out all the papers till you're driving off that lot with the car.
Yeah, and that's not even talking about the haggling and the negotiation of it.
So I'm a big fan of CarMax.
Yeah.
Love their business model.
That's where I bought my last car,
There's no haggle pricing.
Yep.
So you're not, that's gone from that experience.
You should try go haggle with them. It's pretty funny.
I have.
Yeah.
It's funny. Yeah. I actually went and applied for a job there. I mean, I didn't fill out the app. I was just like, I want to see what it's like to work here before I apply. And they're like, oh, okay, fine. You know, like, answer some questions. You know, what opening role? Only reason why I was is because we were trying to figure it out for our mobile home business.
Yeah.
Whole nother side story.
The CarMax model.
I love the CarMax model.
So you're trying to do a undercover boss, but for
yourself. No, I was transparent because I went to a CarMax and said, hey, this is what I'm doing. Because after the first two times I did it, I felt weird. So I was like, you know, I'm just going to tell them. Yeah. I really like this business model. I'd like to ask some people. Does anybody around I could ask some questions? Because I'm just curious because we're getting into mobile homes and I want to do something similar.
Yeah.
And they were just like, what the hell? And the moment I said mobile homes, they're like, whatever you want, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they didn't feel any threat.
Yeah.
But going back to the CarMax model. That's
because they're not called automobile homes.
They should be. It's personal property when it's treated in a mobile home park.
Yeah.
But having said that, so when you go in, you have your no haggle pricing. Then, you know, you sit down with the person who shows you what your credit options are. You know, they're different financing. CarMax offers their own option.
Yeah.
I'm of the opinion that CarMax, pretty much, once it sees the results of what other options you have from other third-party financing, it probably just goes, we're going to undercut them. Yeah. I don't know if that's true.
I mean, what?
But why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So anyways, having said that, you pick your financing, unless you're buying it cash, and then you go, I forget what the room's called, but you basically go there and you fill out all your paperwork. And it's fairly quick.
Yeah.
Now imagine, again, you have to use your imagination because the technology is there, but it's not built yet, is that the haggle portioning of it, I mean, if you want to physically see the vehicle and drive it, you're still going to have to do that.
Yep.
You could just do it through an app. In your own way.
That's the like Carvana model.
Yep. Very similar. Yeah. And then once you go there, it's like, hey, you already have all my credit information because of my identity. I shared it with you through whatever, you know, let's say it was a non-custodial wallet or a dApp, decentralized app that allowed me to share my identity with you.
Yeah.
You ran my credit check already. I already know what my financing options are because we did it on our phone. All of this happening in seconds. 30 seconds at the most.
Yeah.
And it's just done. Not all that time is wasted. You pick one, you're done. Now, instead of going to that other room to sign anything, you merely just do your face, your fingerprint. Everything's done through that verified app because you've already proven your identity.
Yeah.
Because let's say you have this soulbound token. And now you can automatically register with the DMV. And that whole process is streamlined.
Yeah.
You're in and out of there probably within, I mean, unless you're a really big talker, 45 minutes. You're driving off in your new car.
Yeah.
It could happen even faster than that if you just shut up and just let the process work. But here's what happens when that. So you could argue that, why don't we just stick to paper?
Yeah.
You know, everything's still there. It's because it's going to eliminate jobs.
If we do it this way?
It will. Because why wouldn't you reduce your staff? Because now they're causing friction where you don't need friction.
Yeah.
Because it's about getting bodies in the door, make their transaction, and leave. So now, you're, if anything, you're going to hire people to be more PR people because they're doing concierge work.
Yeah.
There could be new jobs that open up as a result of this.
Yeah.
We don't know what those jobs are yet.
Well, I mean, like every time you go to Walmart or something, now they're pushing you towards a self-checkout.
I love self-checkout. Unless you get behind somebody who doesn't know what the fuck they're doing.
Yeah, it's like, this has been around a while, person.
Yeah. No,
okay,
but...
Okay, boomer? Like, just like...
Oh, yeah, you and the boomer. Hey, man, again, I think boomer's more of a mentality than it is an actual age.
I think it's an age, too. But,
but having said that...
Yeah.
That is a component or example of how Web3 could work. And it works within the sphere of... the internet.
Yeah.
And that connectivity, you know, because you have protocols. Again, somebody like Mark Andreessen can talk to the protocol and the technological side of how the internet works and the transmission of that type of networking. But at the end of the day, what the internet does is it connects humans to each other and us to information. And it allows us to do transactions. So in the story of PayPal, for instance, you know, PayPal broke a lot of walls because it allowed you to do credit card transactions and do overseas transactions without having to have a merchant account in the same fashion. It was a pain in the ass before, if not damn near impossible.
Yeah.
They broke a lot of, you know, a lot of issues, challenges. I mean, they made the payment system less friction.
Yeah.
Okay.
All Web, off the back of eBay.
Well, it definitely was on the back of eBay, yeah. And eBay ended up acquiring them.
Yeah.
There was actually a really good How I Built This with Max Levchin, one of the founders of PayPal.
Yeah.
It's actually a two-parter, which I've never seen Guy Raz do on How I Built This, but
yeah.
He talks about it a great deal. And so to that effect, it was such a rich story on so many levels.
Did they talk about how Elon bought in and then they kicked him out?
He didn't buy in. it's a cool story.
Yeah.
Long story short, they were competitors competing in the same space. And finally, this one, I believe his name was Bill Harris, is what Max Levchin said. He said that he saw like they would be better together than just fighting because the market share was so massive. But
yeah,
they unite forces, they're going to be that much bigger of a juggernaut because they were all super hungry in their own way.
Yeah.
But anyways, but what PayPal did and broke down walls is a lot of what's happening with crypto in general.
Mm-hmm.
So crypto being a permissionless environment as well, you have a lot of people who, if they have the right motivation and technical savvy, can create their own coins. You know, whether it's a stable coin or it's just, you know, a token that they create. There's so many ways that people can just generate value out of nothing right now.
Yeah.
I mean, depending upon what side of money you're on, and gold, you know, the dollar bill is a promissory note.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Yeah, it says that on the bill.
So the same thing with filling out your registration for your fucking car. There's no reason that IOU, that promissory note of a dollar, can't be digitized too.
Yeah.
There's no reason for it. In fact, it would move faster. Because for those of us who've lived through the ATM age of trying to find one just to use cash when people wouldn't accept a credit card, I mean, they charge you exorbitant fees too.
Yep.
There's a money machine everywhere, and they're all intermediaries.
Yeah.
Now, there are fees in transacting crypto. Not all crypto, in my opinion, is meant to be used as financial currency.
Yeah.
Bitcoin right now, I don't know if ever would make sense to use as currency.
Yeah.
Like,
well, I mean, the Lightning Network's trying to solve that.
It would solve that problem to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the reason why I like Nano? Transactionless payments.
Almost, yeah.
And it's fast.
It's super fast.
You know what I mean? But at the same rate, you know, at what point in time are you paying $10 for something today, and whoever you paid, that crypto goes up to, let's say, 30.
Yeah.
What you paid for $10 is now actually 30.
10,000 Bitcoin for a pizza.
Oh, yeah, the 10,000 pizza. Yeah. So it's things like that. But yeah. And getting back to Web3, we talk a little bit about ownership. We yeah. talked a little bit about identity. And now we're talking about native payments.
Yeah.
So the native payment side of things within Web3, it's almost making the same leapfrog ability, but even more so, and on a massive scale, that PayPal did as a whole. But now, instead of one company being PayPal, a lot of people can be PayPal, so to yeah. speak. And you have all these new choices. And a lot of those paying choices also have, and again, this is a big debatable word used in crypto, is utility.
Yeah.
So when we think about utility in crypto, and a lot of it, again, hasn't been realized. When we talk about things like Airweave, Arweave, being that decentralized storage, they have tokens. You know, us mining it or us participating in that decentralized storage fulfillment. We get awarded tokens. When we first signed up for our wallet, we got an airdrop of some tokens.
Yeah.
So in that way, it has a currency value to fiat if we wanted to sell it, which we know it's a value in that way, but the utility portion comes back to the storage of the data. And we're able to be rewarded and incentivized with these coins. So in a Web3 world, we can utilize those coins for people who are willing to say, you know, that's a value, I'll accept it
mm-hmm.
for this other exchange of value or goods.
Yeah.
Web3 is allowing that to happen.
Yeah.
Through this whole idea of read, write, and own.
Yeah.
And with own comes identity, and with identity comes native payments. So when we talk about Web3 creators and how they're going to make money, I've just heard this on a lot of podcasts of like, how do they actually make more money? It's just not built yet.
Yeah.
You know, you still have the discovery engine problem you have to solve.
Yep.
But even if you're able to create your own cachet right now. So one of the big music artists, Drake,
mm-hmm.
he had the opportunity to go completely private
yeah.
with all of his music or any of his endeavors. He ended up signing with Universal Music Group.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of chatter to say, what if he just went and did it all himself?
Yep. He didn't want to.
He could have.
Yeah, but he didn't want to.
I'm not saying
that's a lot of work, man.
No, it's a lot of fuck. It's a lot of work, right?
Yeah.
I mean, nobody sees the wizard behind the curtain.
No.
Or wizards in this matter.
Yeah.
But he would have been a bellwether example
yeah.
of how that could have transpired when you see a creator with his already existing platform taking everything in.
Yeah.
Is it greed? Depends. But it's also another way that they can have more ownership and control, creative control over everything that they're putting out.
Yeah.
And then you could involve fans a lot more. So in bringing back another example that's being currently tested, Rob McElhenney,
yeah,
I believe is his name is. He's the one of the writers.
Mythic Quest. It's Always Sunny.
Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he, and I want to say Andreas and Horowitz is backing it to some extent. I think they are. He's coming out with a series of NFTs or a way to do, I forget exactly how it is, but all of the stories that he has, him and other writers are going to collaborate on, are going to be tokenized. And in that way, it's going to allow people to participate and have ownership over their creative material in a way that they've never had before.
Interesting.
So that's a real world example of something that's happening currently.
Okay.
And that's another way of how creators can then take it upon themselves. But again, Rob has an existing platform because he already has fame.
Yeah.
Being on Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah. I think he has a podcast too.
He does have a podcast. Yeah. So he already has some sort of prominence.
Is it him and Charlie Day?
Is it? I don't know.
I don't know.
Now you're making me want to listen because I like Charlie Day.
Oh, yeah. Cracks both me great. Up.
He's got like the male version of Kathleen Turner's voice. Kathleen Turner, though, in her defense, you know, that was actually, I think, a health issue that happened to her to give her that voice.
Oh.
But I love that voice on her.
Yeah.
Like she was great in Friends as Chandler's mom. And then she had a little arc on Californication that was hilarious.
Yeah.
Amazing.
You do love that show.
I like the characters.
Uh-huh.
The characters crack me up. Some of that show is pretty. Racy. You're like, fuck.
Yeah.
You're just like.
Raunchy.
Yeah, but yeah. The characters, some of the characters, man, they're hilarious. But anyways.
Yeah.
So again, those are existing examples of things that people are testing right now as creators. But the problem is that, and this has been talked about on other podcasts that people have posed to others in the know, is discoverability. Like if you come from obscurity, how are they going to discover you in this Web3 world?
Yeah.
Well, in a centralized Web3 world, there's always going to be platforms for it.
Yep.
But at some point in time, as the creator, you may be empowered when it comes out to take more ownership over the connection you have with your fans. In the case of what the Instagram CEO was speaking about, if there was a way that, and the social networks that are existing right now would all have to agree in this and play by this rule, that you as the creator
now own your actual content.
You also own the relationship between you and those engaged with your content.
Yeah.
So regardless of what happens to them, they can't lock you up. But it's going to start somewhere.
Baby steps.
Well, because here's what I think would get Twitter.
Because right now, whenever you put a picture on Instagram, Instagram owns that picture.
So
unless it's a copywritten like image, but I think that goes against their. They're like terms and conditions or whatever.
Oh, that's right.
So,
And I know that there are some platforms that are already offering more, you know, back to the people creating that content.
Yeah.
But they're just not as prominent yet.
Not yet.
So it doesn't make it realistic for somebody to actually just live on that platform because they still need to build a network or community of people that follow them for whatever the reason.
Yeah. I mean, I would say the only one that like, pays you for adding content currently, like, and still is YouTube, right?
Through the monetization of ads.
Yeah.
But you as the creator don't have that much control over the ads.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
So you can't be like, hey, I don't want any, like...
You mean, depending upon where
whatever
you're at,
ads.
So there's some people who are part of influencer networks.
Yeah.
The one gentleman I'm thinking of... his name escapes me right now, but he was on a podcast that I listened to. But he's able to represent something like 160 different YouTubers. So when he has an issue, he can call up somebody from YouTube and be like, hey, this is what's going on. And they'll take his call and listen to him because he's representing 160 powerful. Now, just as an individual YouTuber, it's a lot harder to get that same level of attention from YouTube.
Funny. So like my cat videos that like three people have watched, you're saying I can't go to YouTube? And
well, YouTube also has a certain criteria. You have to, I think, 1,000 subscribers and 4,000 hours of viewing before you can monetize.
Oh, got it. Okay.
That wasn't always the case.
No.
But in this particular scenario, and there was an example actually in crypto space where Bankless, that podcast, and I dare I say it ended up being more to their benefit.
Yeah.
Was their channel got banned or just shut off. And so they tweeted out about how YouTube shut off. And then the CEO, Susan, had commented on it and helped get it back up. And we tweeted about it.
Yeah. Retweeted that whole thing.
Yeah. It was because
pretty funny to watch
how it unfolded.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot more eyes were on them at that point. So in a sense, it actually helped them, in my opinion.
Probably.
You know, it gave them a newfound notoriety where I think it introduced a new audience to them simply because they were that pariah in that situation.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know.
But in a Web3 space, supposedly that couldn't happen.
Yeah.
But there's going to have to be some centralized uses of Web3.
Yeah, because there has to be some governing body.
Well.
Because, like, what if somebody, like, I know some dickhead's probably going to just, like, test the limits of it. Dare I say, just post a bunch of like child porn or some weird fucked up shit, you know?
That's a fair point.
Like, I mean, there has to be some sort of governance, otherwise.
Well, so take Bitcoin, right? Yeah. Satoshi Nakamoto created Bitcoin white paper. Everything was released for Bitcoin. We don't know if it's a group or a person.
Yeah.
But now it's out there. People are using it. It's the bellwether for all things crypto.
Yeah.
It's what everybody's, you know, it's the highest. It's everything kind of almost in step with it. It's coupled with it. But there's nobody up front of it. There's no CEO. There's no, you know, organization that this, we are Bitcoin, so to speak, in that way. And it's going to take somebody in the Web3 space to create a decentralized web that's willing to say, you know what? Our hands are off the wheel on this one.
Yeah.
But we built it.
Is that going to be Jack?
So his whole, I mean, I'm of the opinion that some of their marketing prowess with this, I don't necessarily agree with.
Yeah.
But when you read through the white paper, and it, you know, it's a lengthy read, and I'm not fully through it, and you know, I'm gonna have to read things a few times to really digest it properly. But their slide deck. So if you Google Web5 TBD slide deck, because the company's name's TBD, under his parent company, a block, whatever.
Yeah.
It which does outline
from Square, which I think is just genius.
Well, yes, I'm a big fan of Square.
Yeah. Well, squared to the power of three is a block. So.
Well, there you go, baby.
Yeah.
So to his point about the slide deck, it says Web 2 plus Web 3 equals Web 5. Whether it's tongue in cheek or whatever, it doesn't matter. Getting past my personal opinion of that marketing ploy and branding and their font usage, at the core of it, the concept makes sense. In my opinion, it's not Web 5, it's Web 3.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Is he trying to leapfrog past Web 4? I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
At the core of it, what they're describing.
Cool idea.
Bad, yeah. But that's just my opinion.
Yeah.
But at the core of it, it does deliver on the idea between ownership and identity.
Yeah.
And it does talk about a decentralized web. And a decentralized web where there is no singular entity or individual that stands to gain from the adoption or use of it, that's what we need to happen.
Yeah.
It's I don't know if it directly would be an example of, but it was interesting how Elon released those patents on the electric motors.
Yeah, Tesla and what they use for their motors, yeah.
They opened up their patent so more people could adopt certain technologies.
Yeah.
And
that was like 10 years ago, though, right?
It was a long time ago.
6, 8 years ago, something.
So you could argue it's for the greater good.
But what they kept from you was the battery designs.
And the charging stations.
Yeah.
So if they own more of the charging station and there's more electric cars on the road, you're going to have to use their charging stations.
Yeah. They're the ARCO, then.
Yeah. They are the railroad. They're the ARCO. Mobile. So in this particular case, it would be beneficial, whether it's Jack Dorsey or somebody else, to be like, you know what? We're going to give to get.
Yeah.
It's a good tactic in any business model.
Yeah.
You know, you have to create a reciprocal model because it allows you to grow. So in this particular case, whoever's going to create a truly decentralized Web3 experience, mm-hmm. and they get out of their own way and their greed, it's going to allow them to be even greedier.
Yeah.
Because they're the architects behind it, and we're going to equate it similar to the crypto side of things, and sorry if this is getting, you know, kind of jargony, but if a blockchain is layer one,
yeah,
then Web3, if it had its own layer one, or maybe it was layer zero, you're going to have other elements like a blockchain written on top of the web, the decentralized web. And then you're going to build layer twos, which will be your apps.
Yep.
Or other functionary components that could both be centralized and decentralized. So even though you're on a decentralized Web3 platform, it doesn't mean that everything built on top is going to be decentralized either.
Mm-hmm.
But it could be. But now, because they're the architects behind it, they're going to know how to build the layer two components that are really going to create more money. A great example of that is similar to Apple. Apple created the iTunes store.
Yeah.
For those of you who hate their, you know, 30% take, understand this at its core. They created that world.
Yeah.
The only reason why I think that there's merit to the argument that they need to come down on the 30%, portion of their take is that they're a publicly traded company. If they weren't publicly traded and they were totally private, my opinion is that they're more than entitled to the 30%.
Yeah.
Because they created that world. Anybody bitching about it, don't build on it. That simple. You could argue that, but you're missing out on all this business that they created, that world.
Yeah, I mean, but most of the world uses Android phones, so whatever.
Well, talk to Epic Games then, man. Epic Games is going to be real, you know. They'll probably be more on your side, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
But Epic Games is the one with the lawsuit regarding the whole Apple take of everything.
Yeah.
But in that way, Apple is centralized, right? And they created iTunes, which created this whole ecosystem.
Yeah.
I mean, VCs alone, they should be kissing Apple's ass on so many levels simply because it gave them a lot of their billion-dollar childs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, good, bad, or otherwise. Uber, for whatever you want to say about it, grew from being, you know, on an iOS app.
Coinbase.
You know, the history is long and distinguished at this point. But my point being is this, is that you have to build a Web3 Apple.
Yeah.
Decentralized.
Yeah. Or iStore.
Well, that becomes the iTunes store, so to speak.
Yeah.
So to speak. In this analogy of it.
Yeah.
So that people can now build on top of that decentralized platform and to create all these new iterations. And what's cool about these iterations is now you have such a huge canvas to build. And again, it's taking what we already do and just creating less friction.
Yeah.
So in the sense of bringing it back to real estate, you won't need to have title insurance because the title is written on the blockchain. Sorry for banging on the table.
Yeah.
You won't need, or when I say you won't need it, it's because it's saying that it'll already be built.
Yeah.
But title and insurance is such an archaic way of dealing with the title of a house because it can be tokenized at this point. There's no reason why it should take as long as it does or have as many gaps in the information side of it as it does. So much to the point that escrow would be obsolete because you would have digital escrow accounts. It's a ways and balances. It's
well, with a public address, you can see how much somebody has before they give it to you. So you can be like, okay, that person has that money that they say that they're going to give you.
Yeah. Well, it's not just about the money.
Yeah.
So when you think about inspections of a home, when you're buying a home, it's, again, this is so far in the making, or it's going to take a long time to adopt because, and I've said this on other podcasts, and I'll probably say it in the future, but if homes could almost have like a Carfax where you knew, hey, there was a hole in the roof, there was this, and, you know, or this plumbing was changed, or was changed from galvanized plumbing to copper or flex line, whatever. It'll all be written to that home's ledger, to that home's token.
Yeah.
So now the inspection report can still be done to some extent, but a lot of it's validated. So you don't need these crazy escrow windows. You don't need a lot of these contingencies. A lot of it would just be sped up, and, you know, a lot.
Yeah.
That entire process would be streamlined. So it isn't to say that it's not reinventing what's already being done. It's just streamlining the process.
Yeah.
That's all it is. From somebody like in the mobile home space, in mobile home parks, especially in California, our governing bodies, California Housing and Community Development, which is acronyms HCD, which is weird. But they do carbon paper still.
Yep.
Fucking carbon paper, man.
Yeah.
There's no reason for that in our world today. Yep. Carbon paper.
No, I get it.
There's people probably listening and don't even know what the fuck carbon paper is.
Yeah, whenever you see those weird ass receipts that people pull apart and they have the red, the pink copy, the yellow copy, and then the white copy on top, that's carbon paper.
So when you're thinking about a decentralized system, and if crypto's tied to it, proof of work being this electricity gob and environmentally, think about all the paper that you're not going to be having to create.
Yeah.
Ship and using somebody, other resources to
somebody do. Driving that like to work to file that or like go to town hall and and file that piece of carbon paper with a commission, you know? Yeah.
The entire lifespan of a piece of paper and all of the resources it utilizes from creation till the time it's back in a landfill. I mean, compare the two.
Yeah. It's sat in a landfill.
So, I mean, well, depending upon where you're at, the landfill gives you a better view for the new houses that are being built upon it.
Boom.
But so again, when we're talking about Web3, it's the potential of where it's going. We're so early on in everything.
Yeah.
It's just that we, in my opinion, we have a more informed decision of where it's going to go simply because of what history's taught us.
Yeah.
We utilize what's happened in, you know, Web 1.0, Web 2.0 to really hit the ground running with ideas with Web 3.0.
Yep.
And because of it, there's, you know, a lot of naysayers about it. Again, you know, we are on the side of innovation with that. It doesn't mean that everything that should be built either, though. Yeah. There needs to be, you know, we are dealing in a permissionless environment. The difference in this time around, as opposed to 2.0 and 1.0, is that anybody can be PayPal, so to speak. Yeah. Anybody could be Square, so to speak.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. And because of that, that's why regulation has never seen anything like this.
No, for sure.
I mean, we as humans created
the
way our economic system works. I know I'm going to reference him again. Mark Andreessen talks about how, you know, work from home, he was equating it to people in Rome. You know, they didn't have offices. Everybody used to work from wherever they lived, and then they would come together for these big meetings. Well, they didn't have technology back then. He even alludes to that.
Yeah.
But it's such a different society of humans that we can't necessarily draw from what we've already done to inform how we're going. It can definitely help us make educated decisions.
Yeah.
But I'm of the opinion that with each innovation that we're having, we're faced with new situations that similar to what VCs look at as maybe it's just poor timing.
Yeah.
A great idea, but poor timing. We might be living through that again with everything that's currently happening.
Yeah.
That there's certain things that are going to come out that's just poor timing. And it may not just be technology. It may be a way of thinking about value. It may be a way of governing ourselves as humans. So it isn't necessarily just something physical, but something or something tangible, but something much more intrinsic.
Yeah.
That certain ways of thinking and handling and conducting ourselves as humans might just be a little ahead of its time, or we're just not ready for it as a society.
Yeah.
I mean, you can get real deep into this, right?
Yeah.
Real in the weeds. But if there's anything the internet has done, it's connected us.
Yeah. Everybody all over the planet.
So what are your thoughts? I mean, in regards to just, obviously I've done a lot more talking this time than you.
Yeah, definitely.
You're like, shut the fuck up.
Never. Never.
No. It's a podcast. You can't. If you shut the fuck up, that's just dead air.
Then people will just like click. Okay. What's happening now? Why aren't they talking?
So, I don't know. What thoughts do you have about Web3?
Like,
what are things you like about it, don't like about it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, I don't know.
You seem conflicted.
I am. It's a big word, Web3. It's
right?
a big idea. It is. You know, it's basically because it's not built yet, it's like hard to imagine what exactly it encompasses, what part you own and don't, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because none of that is built.
Like the infrastructure is not even built. The roads aren't even built. Like the roads are built, but like there's no town that you can stop for gas in between these two big cities that we're trying to leave Web 2 to go to Web 3, but there's no truck stops along the route. You know what I mean?
What do they call those? Giants? I think there's Petros. Petros.
Yeah.
For those who've driven across country. They have all you can eat chicken fried steak.
The Loves.
I remember Loves.
I love Loves.
This is my old fart talk here. I remember I saw Loves. I want to say it was 72 cents a gallon.
Yeah.
Somewhere outside of Tulsa. But anyways. So, but in step with Web 3.
Okay,
right?
Boomer.
I know, right?
Got him. Got him.
So, user experience.
Yeah.
Is one of the biggest problems with what we're doing in crypto and what people are doing with Web 3 is it's horrible.
I mean, there's no like easy way because like with Facebook, you know, my parents are on Facebook. You just basically sign up, put your email address in, good to go.
Oh yeah, there's not a Web3 way of doing that.
Yeah, you have to get an Ethereum account, you know, get an Ethereum address. You got to be able to like link it to, so either using MetaMask, Coinbase wallet, one of these extension browsers, you know what I mean? Or browser extensions that you put on, and then you connect your financials to it, and then what? Then you go, okay, cool, I'm going to buy an NFT. I'm going to own that NFT, but then it goes into that wallet. And then from there, you either move it to your like personal, and it's just so many steps to it that I think it's going to be a while before we can get the normies on board, you know?
Well, even when we signed, when I you know, signed up for our ENS,
yeah,
Ethereum name service, for Fort Brock, it was a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, there's a learning curve.
There was a learning curve there, mm-hmm. And it's how do you normalize? Because when you go to GoDaddy, it's pretty simple.
Yeah,
it's hard to fuck up.
Yeah,
getting your domain.
Yeah, after loading your domain.
It's a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
I mean, if you don't understand how to manage a DNS, a domain name server,
mm-hmm.
yeah, that'll get you in the weeds real quick. I mean,
yeah.
Used to charge people, I think, like $250 to set up their DNS.
Really?
You know, it takes me like 10 minutes, five minutes. It doesn't take any time at all.
No,
now,
not anymore.
I mean, back then, it took longer. I mean, I could probably still charge people $250 to do it now if they don't know.
Yeah.
But.
Well, I'm just going to sign on to my Squarespace and do it.
Squarespace does make it easier.
Yeah.
Their software is a little bloated in some ways. That's a whole nother subject.
Yeah.
But so in step with some of the problems with Web3, and this is also talked about on a number of other channels and blogs. So this isn't original. It's just things that we've also discovered.
Yeah.
Is, you know, we talk about understanding it. Well, that comes along with education of it.
Yeah.
There's a hole in there, but there's that's part of the hurdle. And the fact that it is supremely centralized still. I mean, if a VC is funding a company in the Web3 space, it's not starting off from a decentralized standpoint.
No, and you know, like honestly, you were hitting on it when you were talking about it, forget which section, you kind of jumped around a little bit. We have, and it's natural. But I think it was in the decentralized versus centralized rant that you were going on.
Okay.
I'm just kidding about the rant part.
That's
but,
all right. I got thick skin.
Talking about, like, you know, Web3 is supposed to be decentralized, but it's like it can't all be decentralized.
What makes you say that?
You have to have somebody with skin in the game in order to like build an Instagram or build one of these platforms. You know what I mean?
Well, so I was talking about that in regards to if Jack Dorsey's building the
Web 5,
or it is Web 3.
Yeah.
But if he's building the platform that they have with TBD.
Yeah.
And it's called something specific in their white paper. TBDEX, that white paper. If they're building that.
Yeah.
and they're building it in a truly decentralized way.
Yeah.
They're doing it from that same cliche of, you know, they're planting a tree knowing that they're not going to live long enough to see it grow.
Yeah.
In this particular case, they will live long enough to see it grow. But because they're the architects of it, they're also going to be the ones that could possibly build centralized applications on top of this decentralized web.
Mm-hmm.
So their version of a layer one and layer two.
Yeah.
That can really have some skin in the game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But then again,
that's what I'm saying, trying to get at. It's like there has to be that person that's willing to take the risk, and, you know, or like the building the iTunes. Like there has to be some sort of centralization. Somebody has to have skin in that game in order for the innovation to happen. Well, 'cause nobody's going to just go, okay, cool. Like Elon Musk isn't going to be like, hey, like I'm moving everybody that I can to Mars. Like, don't pay me. You know what I mean? What's
well, he's making money in other ways, yes, but
yeah, he's going to have to make money in order to
in his lifetime. Project. Chances are he's not going to see.
Yeah,
he's not going to benefit from.
Yeah,
colonizing Mars, but he's set that groundwork.
Yeah,
we need that type of thinking in this world
for sure.
You know, good, bad, or otherwise, we
maybe
do.
One of his 16 kids will. I don't know. You know,
maybe.
He's got a bunch of kids.
Well, you know, I think it was, Think and Grow Rich, the Napoleon Hill book? There's a section on there that talks about a heightened sexuality with smart people.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I believe it's Think and Grow. I don't think it was Dale Carnegie.
No.
I think it's Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill.
Oh, okay.
If that's the one. And if it is, it's a great chapter.
Yeah.
I love that chapter. I listened to it 3 times on my first listen.
Yeah.
You know, I listened to all the other chapters, but it did. It talked about a heightened sexual drive. With intelligent people.
Oh, that's interesting.
Me listening to it 3 times doesn't make me intelligent. I just found out I was a fan of the topic. but to that point,
yeah.
If what Jack Dorsey is doing is for the better good of creating this purely decentralized way, he's going to benefit from it. Now, for sure. Maybe because it is built on the Bitcoin blockchain, it does tie back to mining.
Yeah.
So if you're able to offer the computational power or the resources similar to what mining does with crypto, but you can do it with the Web3 infrastructure. And we talk about this with Airweave.
Yeah.
If you're part of
decentralized storage, yeah.
If you're talking about that decentralized storage, as long as people are transmitting data, but it's decentralized, the transmission of that data is decentralized.
Yeah.
Now we're making rewards. So now you've created a new reward system.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, that's how you make money.
Yeah.
That's one component of it. Because he's also heavily invested in Bitcoin mining.
Yeah.
Since this is built on the Bitcoin blockchain, there's something to be said for that.
Yeah.
So there can be an ROI in it by keeping it openly decentralized.
Yeah.
But if other people wanted to build decentralized protocols on top of this protocol to create that social, all-inclusive social network...
Mm-hmm.
They could possibly benefit because they too are doing it maybe in a proof of work, proof of impression. I know proof of impression isn't a thing. We talked about it on the podcast.
Yeah.
Need to come out with something on Mirror that explains what it is in our thought process. But it also breaks down the proof of impression as being a way of getting away from traditional advertising too.
Yeah.
But that's a concept that we have as opposed to what's real today. But people could do it. And they would live to see the fruits of that labor.
Yeah.
Because this is moving fast. You know, he's young enough to where 25 years from now, he's going to see it. But he's in a place, personally, I would imagine, that finance is not necessarily his ultimate goal.
Yeah.
Other than legacy and, you know.
Yeah.
Having Coldplay play at his...
Funeral?
Funeral, like Steve Jobs. You know, he wants that kind of juice, probably.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know the man. But, you know, this is...
I don't want Coldplay now cool. playing at my... What?
You don't like Chris Martin?
Oh, I love him. Okay. But his last record.
Well, you
it's way too pop. It's not like Coldplay.
You like The Weeknd.
I love The Weeknd.
That's pop as fuck.
But The Weeknd didn't start out doing Coldplay songs and then turn pop. He started out pop and then like...
Oh, so you don't like going on the journey with an artist this change?
Not the way that they're going, no.
I guess you don't listen to Sparks.
No.
You know what Sparks is?
Nicholas Sparks?
I know you like The Notebook.
No, I don't know. It's not bad. What did you say?
But getting back to all things Web3, if VCs...
Just tell me what you want from me.
You do look like Ryan Gosling.
No, I don't. No, but thank you.
It's like that movie Shallow Hal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's what I see. I see Ryan Gosling.
Oh, thanks, man.
Of course, Gwyneth Paltrow did not like making... Or didn't... I think she has some sort of issue with Shallow Hal at this point.
Did she?
Yeah. You can Google that.
Oh.
Which we came full circle because she was married to Chris Martin. Look at how that happened.
Apple. And we keep saying the name of their first kid.
Apple.
Oh, my gosh. Jeez. Getting corny now.
Okay. So, I mean, I've seen posts, a lot of posts on why Web3 matters.
Yeah.
You know, again... A16Z has a lot of great stuff. I feel like Sequoia has been coming out with more content now.
I'm in, because in that Discord jump, Web3 for marketers.
Yeah, you said that's a real active community.
Yeah, super active.
Yeah.
Everybody's posting all the time.
It's hard for me to keep up with Discord, man.
Oh, yeah, it's
horrible. Once I started getting into it, it was just like, oh, shit, I ain't getting anything done today. But I sure met a lot of people, sort of.
Sort of.
You know, but learned a lot.
Yeah.
Like, some of these Discords, especially ones that are heavily engaged or the communities, they're really pushing it. They create so much, so many resources for you to dive into and learn. That's one thing I will say about our current environment that's been really amazing to continue. I mean, we're all growing up, right?
Yeah.
We're never getting younger. We're getting older, at least physically, but mentally, as long as we're open to change. But there's so many access to learn for free.
Are you on Angie's Discord?
The Beast Mode one?
Beast Mob?
No, I haven't gotten on it yet. How is it?
It's good. All right. It's just starting out, so not much, but yeah. Shameless plug for her, I guess.
So the idea behind Web3 is to remove power from the existing entities.
Yeah.
It's going to be a tough one.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones with the capital to go and create more.
Yep.
Utilizing the technology of Web3, but still in a centralized environment.
Yeah.
Now, in the case of what Jack Dorsey is proposing with this TBDEX, it's a situation where, again, he might be creating the decentralized version of Apple so that he can open up his own iTunes, so to speak, or maybe the decentralized iTunes to open up a way for him to eventually make more money on other things. Regardless of the case, it needs to be done. There needs to be a decentralized Web3 created, and it's not created yet. So everything is one that's not adopted, I should say.
Yeah,
for sure. To the point. Because, I mean, Flux has been pushing out a lot of information regarding, you know, decentralized hosting, decentralized environments, and all of it, again, cautiously optimistic as to what it could be, what can be. But we're just at the beginning of it. And, you know, I've even seen headlines that said more debate than... reality or something to that extent. What were you going to say?
Yeah, I was going to say that like the internet as we know it right now is more decentralized than most things that we have in our life.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's just like, yes, there are a few gatekeepers such as like GoDaddy and the ENSs or like naming services.
Yeah.
You know, like that's your only... gate, basically. But then from there you can post whatever you want, however you want. You just have to be able to build it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there has to be a way to claim ownership of your piece within that world. There has to be a monetary way. It's just good to know that you don't have to keep paying it every year.
Yeah.
You know, I don't.
But you'll still have to pay to host it.
No. Maybe. If it's done on like a proof of work chain, no, you're not.
To host it?
Yeah.
Well, who's paying to host it?
Wouldn't it be the miners?
But why would they mine? Wouldn't you be mining to pay for that?
I have to look into that more.
Like, because somebody's got to pay the miners. Like, why would the miners
be transacting that data for free? They wouldn't be.
Yeah, no.
No, that would be incentivized by the platform in which they're built on. We should look into more of the white papers regarding some of what Flux has done.
Yeah.
That might help inform the decisions. Mm-hmm. More of the white paper of Filecoin.
Mm-hmm.
Been getting through the information on Arweave.
That's storage. So I'm just saying, like, flat out hosting of it.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah. Okay. I think you have to pay to host on them, but they probably make you pay in flux, right?
Maybe.
Yeah.
So where does the metaverse fit with Web3?
The metaverse. Ah, yes. I'm glad you found that funny.
Is there going to be a decentralized metaverse?
Maybe, but somebody would have to build it.
And
they'd have to have their hand in some sort of cookie jar.
There'll be a link in our show notes to the Microsoft, the council they're trying to make in regards to standardize the formatting for things such as the metaverse.
Yeah.
Similar to the way the web was standardized with HTML.
Yeah, they want to run the Windows of the metaverse, basically.
I would imagine that they would.
I mean, why not, right?
Yeah, because there's going to be money in that,
too. Until Linux comes out. And
yeah, they finally got rid of Internet Exploder or Explorer.
I just saw that.
That was pretty funny.
Yeah.
But so in regards to Web3 and the metaverse.
So, I mean, we talked about this blue sky with the NFTs, basically. Like, at some point, you're going to be able to have a bridge to take your skin from, you know, was that one your kids play?
Fortnite,
and then travel into like Assassin's Creed or something and play that same skin in through those, because you'll own that skin.
Yeah,
like that will be, you know.
So it is very much Ready Player One.
Yeah, exactly.
It's sensationalized in that movie, I think, book.
Yeah,
but imagine if
great movie, great book.
I was a fan.
I loved it. Yeah.
But where does Web3 fit into that? So if you think about read, write, and own, going back to that, mm-hmm. and you think about identity and you think about native payments,
yeah,
you see how it seamlessly moves into the metaverse now.
Yeah.
And again, metaverses can be centralized and decentralized. And maybe there will be people who create a truly decentralized one.
Mm-hmm.
Again, Epic Games, in my opinion, has the platform to build a metaverse that could be widely adopted rather quickly.
Yeah.
And they can utilize all the great things about Web3.
They'd still want to be paid.
Yeah. They're going to get paid somehow.
Yeah.
I mean, well, again,
sell them like at billboards within their metaverse.
It's going to be so nasty, which is funny because of Ready Player One, you have the character's name, Nolan Sargento or whatever.
Yeah.
That was his big thing. He was going to have all these ads. And it was like, come on, man.
Yeah.
There's a better way to do it. Mm-hmm. Again, it's going to come back to that mirror paper I want to do. About proof of impression.
For sure.
But in regards to Web3 and the metaverse, yeah, they go hand in hand because of those attributes that we talked about with read, write, own, again, with identity and payments. And then when you talk about ownership in that world and the real world, this also, and these are definitely privilege problems.
Yeah.
Right? So NFT galleries of people's, you know, collections.
Yeah.
They're physical and real. I mean, people have paintings in their very nice, rich houses that they want to show people, but you can only do it so much in the real world. But if you have your own gallery in the other side, let's say on Bored Ape Yacht Club, they now have reason to visit. And maybe you charge them an admission to visit and view it. I mean, it's the idea behind going to Disneyland with an Oculus.
Yeah.
So
you can do that?
I don't know if you can, but it would be dope if you could.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, imagine if you're not mobile.
Yeah.
Or you don't have the money to travel.
That's true. Because
Disneyland is fucking expensive.
I thought you were saying to go into Disneyland wearing your Oculus. I was like, they have that?
No, like, but
you're walking around Disneyland in a metaverse of Disneyland while you're actually in Disneyland.
But they do have augmented reality.
Oh, for sure.
You know what I mean? They have a substantial amount of augmented reality. You ever played Pokemon Go in Disneyland?
Yeah, not in Disneyland.
It's fucking awesome.
No, I should though.
Yeah. but to that point, when you start bridging a lot of the newer technologies, I mean, augmented reality and virtual reality, a lot of them are not, this isn't new, but with crypto, with the idea behind Web3, with the idea behind centralization, or decentralization, I should say, sorry, it just opens up the canvas of what can be created.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we're so far into this that most of our discussions at this point is validating the promise as opposed to what's been built.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, and we've seen this in the down market, is that because people were able to build something fast, it wasn't necessarily built on sound business models.
Yeah.
Right? So you see some DeFi products fucking up.
Yep.
You know, you're seeing some tokens, coins, you know, cryptocurrencies fucking up.
Yeah.
Because they were building in a permissionless environment.
Mm-hmm.
And they were building in a time where they didn't have to consider the worst case scenario, which is current.
Mm-hmm.
And we still don't know if it's the bottom. We can speculate that we've hit the bottom.
Yeah.
But again, it's speculation. So because, and this is something that I like about the culture of innovators, not just tech, but innovation in general, they feel like down markets are a time to build. Because if you can succeed in a down market, you have promise of staying power.
Yeah.
If you have staying power, that means your mechanics are sound, not just your insides and your out, you know, everything about it is much more sound.
Yep.
If you can weather the storm without dipping into the piggy bank, then that means that you're sound as well. So a lot of things I think are going to come out of this downturn that is going to help the case of Web3 becoming a reality. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's this website called Web3's Going Great. I believe her name, Molly, I forget her, my apologies, but she was on a podcast with Peter Kafka, and it's sarcastic in tone of Web3's Going Great. She's basically pointing out, I believe she was an engineer at HubSpot, Molly White, and she talked, basically she's pointing out all the things that are wrong with Web3 and what's wrong with it going on.
Molly White, correct.
So you can look at it a number of ways. Do I think, because this has been talked about, is she trying to gain some notoriety and fame by doing this? Sure. I mean, you don't get on a podcast to not have a little bit of vanity in you.
Yeah.
We do. This helps with us connecting with people who might be interested in Fort Brock's and our existing card partners. Oh. That's our agenda with our podcast. But at the core of it, we believe we have value to share because we're learning and we're openly sharing how we're learning, what we're learning in the Web3 crypto blockchain. I mean, this new frontier.
This is just like a bad news website. A
little bit. But here's the thing. And I do agree with this point of view on a number of people have thought about it this way. If you're looking at it from an optimistic perspective, you look at a site like that and what it's doing is it's aggregating all the pain points in Web3. Use those pain points to better inform how you make decisions.
Yeah.
Because with every one of those pain points is an opportunity.
Sorry about that, folks. We had a little technical difficulty with our video camera system. Had some batteries die. So.
But the Web3 side of things, that's, I guess, right now, that's the best way to describe it, is talk about what it can be.
Yeah.
The way people are working on it. We'll have some links in our show notes as far as podcasts we listen to, websites that we go to constantly stay up on information about it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we're living in, you know, a crazy part of history. We've already done it.
Yep.
With the pandemic. We've done it through a lot of, you know, movements that have happened. It feels like a decade has transpired each year, the past few years lately, like so much has been happening.
Yeah.
And so this is another portion of that. And
for sure.
Innovation is part of the evolution of things, and it's just going to keep happening.
Yeah.
And it's just I'm excited to be in the time I'm at. You know, I used to think, oh my gosh, it'd be so cool to be living in the 60s because I'm a big fan of that era.
Yeah.
But
like the worst band ever. Or just...
But now, I mean, maybe it's just because I'm getting older. Yeah. I am so excited to living in the time that we're living in right now.
Yeah.
I guess the only thing, and this is similar, and this was something that was said on Pirate Radio. You know, I'm going to miss not being around to hear all the great songs that have yet to be written.
Yeah.
In that way, I'm going to, when I do pass, I'm going to miss all the future innovation that's going to happen.
Yeah.
There's probably going to be a shit show at every point in history.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to think that everything's going to be, you know.
Roses.
I was going to say syrup and pancakes, but we'll go with roses.
Yeah. Syrup and pancakes. I like that.
Yeah. Who doesn't like that?
Yeah.
But I'm just going to miss the fact that we won't get to live to see all of it.
Yeah.
Because it'd be so cool. But I feel like we're in the middle of history. I mean, you kind of always are. But we're in the middle of a different kind of history. We don't have the same problems that our predecessors had to deal with.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If anything, I feel like we're more privileged to be in the situation that we're in right now and the history we're living through.
I've got a smartphone, computer, you know?
It's just crazy.
I have all of the information that I need at my fingertips.
Yeah.
It's just about seeing stuff now.
Well, they talk about gratitude. They talk about experiences. Yeah. You know, all those things. Perspective.
Yeah.
But we thank you so much for joining us on this podcast. We hope you found value in what we're talking about. If you do see value in what we're doing with our podcast, please share with others. Who doesn't like to share value?
Yeah.
If you're a repeat listener of this, you probably heard me say this ad nauseam. But yeah, we like to share value. We hope we're sharing value with you.
Yeah.
You know, you put in the time to share with us, to listen to what we have to say, and hopefully you found value while listening to us and you don't feel like it's wasted time. So this show is produced by Wizard Cats and Vocal Visual. I'm your host, Neil Alonzo, with my co-host and co-founder of Fort Brox, Mr. Brandon Heath.
Brandon Don Heath.
This recording podcast studio is provided by ADU West Coast in Seal Beach. They turn underutilized garage space and backyards into rental housing units. You can find them at aduwestcoast.com. They're a great group of people.
Yeah.
Just ask for Cameron.
Yeah.
Cameron's awesome.
What's up, dude?
And it's Friday, so he's wearing casual Friday.
Cornhuskers.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You guys. Oh, yeah, he played for them, didn't he?
Yeah.
There you go. the music at the beginning of this podcast and at the end of this podcast is by our good friend, Mr. Brad McLean, and the band he's with, The Celebrators. They came out with an EP, so check it out on Spotify, The Celebrators. So thank you again for listening to Fort Brox Crypto Podcast.
FortBrox.com! Thanks, guys.